A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking three things. How glow-in-the-dark technology actually works at the atomic level. Whether oil-based industrial permanent markers with glow properties exist anywhere. And whether glow-in-the-dark eventually stops working permanently. There's a lot of material science tension packed into those questions. Because the short answers are, it's brilliant physics, no. And here's why, and yes, but not the way most people think.
That third one is where things get genuinely interesting, because the degradation mechanism isn't what people assume. Most folks think glow-in-the-dark runs out like a battery. You recharge it a finite number of times and then it's dead. That's not what's happening at all.
Right. It's not a fuel tank. It's a crystal that's slowly being wrecked by the environment. And I think that mental model of recharge cycles comes from our experience with rechargeable batteries, where there's a chemical reaction that literally gets used up. People naturally map that onto anything that stores energy.
Which is a reasonable intuition. It's just wrong for this particular case. A lithium-ion battery loses capacity because the electrolyte decomposes and the electrodes physically degrade with each charge-discharge cycle. The number of cycles matters. With phosphorescence, the number of cycles is basically irrelevant. It's time and exposure that kill it, not usage. You could charge a glow star 10,000 times in a dry, dark drawer and it'd be fine. Leave it outside for one summer and it's toast.
That's a really helpful distinction. So let's start with the first question. How does glow-in-the-dark actually work at the atomic level? Because to understand why the marker doesn't exist and why the glow eventually fades, you need to know what's happening inside the material.
Most people confuse three terms right out of the gate: photoluminescence, fluorescence, and phosphorescence. They get used interchangeably, and they're not the same thing.
Not even close. Photoluminescence is the umbrella term, any material that absorbs photons and then emits photons. Under that umbrella, you've got fluorescence, where the emission stops basically the instant you remove the light source. We're talking nanoseconds. That's your highlighter under a blacklight, your white t-shirt at a bowling alley. Then you've got phosphorescence, which is what we actually mean by glow-in-the-dark. The material keeps emitting light for minutes or hours after the light source is gone.
Fluorescence is on while the light's on, off when it's off. Phosphorescence is, charge it up, then it glows in the dark.
I've seen people get confused by this. They'll buy something labeled glow-in-the-dark, shine a light on it, turn off the lights, and nothing happens. Because what they actually bought was a fluorescent item that only works under active UV. The packaging was misleading.
That's a common consumer trap, especially with cheap party supplies and costume makeup. If it says glows under blacklight, that's fluorescence. If it says glows in the dark and actually means it, that's phosphorescence. And the mechanism that makes phosphorescence possible is what makes this whole topic fascinating. The modern standard material is strontium aluminate. Chemical formula, Cerala. Strontium aluminate, doped with two rare earth elements, europium and dysprosium. This was discovered by a Japanese company called Nemoto & Company in 1993, and it completely replaced the older zinc sulfide technology.
Which was terrible by comparison.
Zinc sulfide doped with copper glows for minutes. Strontium aluminate is roughly 10 times brighter and lasts 10 times longer. We're talking hours of visible glow versus blink, and you'll miss it. If you've ever seen one of those old-school glow-in-the-dark stars from the 1980s, the ones your parents might have put on the ceiling, those were zinc sulfide. You'd charge them with the bedroom light for an hour, turn off the lights, and they'd be dim within 10 minutes and gone in 20.
Whereas modern strontium aluminate stars will still be visibly glowing at 3 in the morning if you charge them properly.
Your eyes just need to be dark adapted. So what's actually happening inside that crystal?
Let's build it up step by step, because the trap mechanism is the key to everything.
Imagine the crystal lattice of strontium illuminate as this regular, repeating three-dimensional grid of atoms, strontium, aluminum, and oxygen, all locked into a specific geometric arrangement. When a photon hits it, ideally in the blue to near ultraviolet range, around 400 to 450 nanometers, it smacks into an electron and kicks it up to a higher energy state. That's the excitation. Now, in a normal fluorescent material, that electron would fall right back down and emit a photon immediately. But here's where the europium comes in.
The europium ions are the trap. And I want to pause on that word trap, because it's doing a lot of work. What does it actually mean for an ion to be a trap?
Europium ions sit in the crystal lattice in place of some of the strontium ions. They're a dopant, a substitutional impurity. And because europium has a different electron configuration than strontium, it creates these localized energy states within what would otherwise be a forbidden energy gap. An electron gets excited by the incoming photon, lands in this europium-created energy state, and can't immediately fall back down because the quantum mechanics don't allow a direct transition. It needs a little thermal kick, ambient heat from the room, to get unstuck.
And that's why it's slow. The electron is waiting for a thermal nudge.
Waiting for a thermal nudge. And here's where the dysprosium comes in. Dysprosium ions create what are called deep traps. They're even harder for electrons to escape from. So you've got a population of electrons in shallow europium traps that release over seconds to minutes, and a population in deep dysprosium traps that release over minutes to hours. The combination gives you that long, slow decay curve, bright at first, then gradually dimming over hours.
Think of the europium ions as shallow buckets catching electrons, and the dysprosium as deep wells with narrow openings that drip them back out over time. The shallow buckets empty fast, which gives you that initial brightness. The deep wells drain slowly, which gives you the long tail.
That's a good image. And the quantum efficiency of this process, the ratio of photons emitted to photons absorbed, is around 90% for high-quality strontium illuminate. That's remarkably efficient. Zinc sulfide, by comparison, is down around 10 to 20%. So for every 100 photons that hit the strontium illuminate crystal, roughly 90 eventually come back out as visible light.
Almost every photon you put in comes back out eventually. That's an incredible energy storage and release system. It's basically a light battery with 90% round-trip efficiency.
Almost everyone. Which is why a few minutes of direct sunlight can give you hours of glow. The material is incredibly efficient at storing and slowly releasing that energy. The optimal charging light is blue to near UV, that 400 to 450 nanometer range. Sunlight is fantastic. LED flashlights work well if they lean cool white. Old incandescent bulbs are terrible because they're mostly infrared and red, which don't have enough energy to excite those electrons across the band gap.
If you're trying to charge glow-in-the-dark stuff indoors with warm lighting, you're basically getting nothing. And this explains something I've noticed. Those glow-in-the-dark stars on a kid's ceiling will charge way better near a window that gets afternoon sun than they will under a bedside lamp, even if the lamp seems brighter to your eyes.
Your eyes perceive brightness across the whole visible spectrum, but the phosphor only cares about photons with enough energy, short enough wavelength, to make that electron jump. A warm white LED bulb puts out very little in the blue and near UV range. It looks bright to you because your eyes are sensitive to the yellow and red components, but to the strontium illuminate crystal, it's practically darkness.
The mismatch between human perception and what the material actually needs is another reason people get frustrated with glow-in-the-dark products. They think they're charging it, but they're using the wrong light source.
A UV flashlight or direct sun is the way to go. Which brings us to the second question, the marker. And this is where the physics we just described collides with practical materials engineering in a way that's basically unresolvable with current technology.
The short answer is no. Oil-based industrial permanent markers with glow-in-the-dark properties don't exist. And the reason is particle size. But let's unpack that fully, because there are actually three separate problems stacked on top of each other.
Particle size is the core problem. The strontium illuminate phosphor particles that produce a good glow are typically 20 to 50 microns across. For comparison, a human hair is about 70 microns wide. These are substantial particles. They're essentially tiny ceramic crystals, and they need to be that size because the electron traps that create the glow are distributed throughout the volume of the crystal. The bigger the crystal, the more traps, the brighter the glow.
They're heavy.
They're dense. Strontium aluminate has a specific gravity around 3.6. It's more than 3.5 times denser than water. So if you try to suspend these particles in a low-viscosity solvent-based ink, which is what oil-based permanent markers use, they settle out. Within minutes, all your glow pigment is at the bottom of the marker barrel. You'd pick up the marker, draw a line, and get nothing but clear solvent because all the phosphor is in a sludge at the bottom.
Like trying to keep sand suspended in water. And you can't just shake the marker to resuspend it?
You can try, but the particles settle into a compacted sludge at the bottom. Shaking doesn't redisperse them evenly. You get clumps, you get inconsistent flow, and the marker tip clogs almost immediately. Industrial markers rely on consistent, low-viscosity ink that flows through a precision tip. You can't have a slurry of ceramic particles in there.
Why not just grind the particles finer? Make them small enough to stay suspended.
You can, and that's exactly what manufacturers of glow-in-the-dark paint pens do. They grind the phosphor down to maybe 5 to 10 microns so it'll flow through a marker tip. But here's the trade-off. When you crush strontium aluminate crystals that small, you destroy the crystal structure. You're creating fractures, disrupting the lattice, and reducing the number of intact electron traps.
Smaller particles mean dimmer glow. And this isn't a linear relationship, is it?
It's dramatic. A 5-micron strontium aluminate particle might have 10% of the glow output of a 40-micron particle. The traps are concentrated in the interior of the crystal. When you fracture it, you create surface defects that provide non-radiative recombination pathways. Electrons fall back down without emitting light. They just turn into heat.
You're choosing between bright glow, but the particles won't fit through the tip, or dim glow that barely works. And there's no middle ground where you get both.
Not with current technology. And even the dim glow version doesn't solve the settling problem in solvent-based inks. The paint pens that do exist, like Molotow or Montana glow-in-the-dark paint markers, use an acrylic base, not an oil or solvent base. Acrylic is thicker, more viscous, so it can hold particles in suspension better. But acrylic is not permanent in the industrial sense.
That's the key distinction. When we say industrial permanent marker, we're talking about something like the Edding 780 or Markel or Dicam markers. These are solvent-based inks that cure to a finish that can survive 400 degrees Celsius, acetone exposure, abrasion, outdoor weathering. These are markers used in fabrication shops, on engine components, on steel that's going to be welded or machined. The marker has to survive processes that would destroy normal ink instantly.
The Edding 780 specifically is tested to survive 400 degrees Celsius. You can hit it with acetone and it doesn't budge. You can leave it outside for years. That's the standard we're talking about. And there is no glow-in-the-dark version because the phosphorescent pigments would degrade at those temperatures. Strontium aluminate starts losing trap depth above about 150 degrees Celsius. By 400 degrees, the crystal structure is permanently damaged. The europium and dysprosium ions migrate, the lattice deforms, and the traps are gone.
Even if you solve the particle size problem and the suspension problem, the thermal requirement alone kills it.
Kills it dead. And there's a third problem. Strontium aluminate is hygroscopic. It absorbs moisture from the air. In a sealed marker barrel, that's manageable. But once you apply it to a surface and the solvent evaporates, the phosphor particles are exposed. Humidity gets into the crystal lattice and creates those same non-radiative pathways. Electrons lose energy as heat instead of light. So the glow fades not because it's running out of something, but because water is wrecking the crystal.
Industrial environments are often humid, or the marked objects get washed, or they're exposed to rain. So even if you somehow got the marker to work on the bench, the mark itself would degrade in the field.
You'd have a glowing mark for maybe a week, and then it'd be dead, which defeats the purpose of an industrial permanent marker. The whole point is that the mark survives.
To recap the marker question, no, they don't exist. The physics of phosphorescent pigments are fundamentally incompatible with the requirements of oil-based industrial permanent markers. Too large, too heavy, too fragile, too heat-sensitive, too moisture-sensitive. It's not one problem, it's a stack of 5 problems that all point in the same direction.
The niche exceptions that come close aren't really exceptions. There are UV reactive markers that fluoresce under blacklight, but that's fluorescence, not phosphorescence. They don't glow in the dark after you remove the light. There are acrylic-based glow paint pens, but they fail a simple acetone rub test in 10 seconds. They're not industrial-grade permanent. They're craft supplies.
Covering the covers.
Which brings us to the third question. Does glow-in-the-dark eventually stop working? And this is where the answer is more nuanced than most people expect.
The short answer is yes, but not because it runs out of glow. And I want to emphasize this because it's the most common misconception we encounter. People treat glow-in-the-dark like it has a finite number of charges, and that's just not the mechanism.
The glow mechanism itself, the electron traps, can be recharged indefinitely. There's no fuel being consumed. You could charge and discharge strontium aluminate a million times, and the underlying physics would still work. What fails is the material around the physics.
Three main failure modes.
UV light, the same UV that charges the phosphor so well, also breaks down the organic binder or resin that holds the phosphor particles onto whatever surface they're applied to. Over time, the binder becomes brittle, cracks, and the phosphor particles simply fall off. The glow didn't stop working. The glow particles physically left the building.
The material delaminates. It's like the paint peeling off a wall. The paint pigment is still perfectly good. It's just not on the wall anymore.
Second, moisture ingress. Strontium aluminate is hygroscopic, as I mentioned. Water molecules penetrate the crystal lattice over time and create non-radiative recombination centers. The electron traps are still there, but now there's a competing pathway where the energy leaks away as heat instead of light. The quantum efficiency drops from 90% down to 50, 30, 10.
There's no way to dry it out and recover?
Once the crystal structure has been altered by water, it's permanent. You can't bake the moisture out and get the glow back. The damage is done at the atomic level. It's not like a wet sponge you can squeeze out. The water has chemically altered the crystal. Third, thermal quenching. Prolonged exposure to high temperatures, above about 150 degrees Celsius, causes the crystal lattice to deform. The trap depths change, the europium and dysprosium ions migrate slightly, and the whole engineered structure degrades. This is also permanent.
UV wrecks the binder, water wrecks the crystal, heat wrecks the lattice. Three different mechanisms, three different targets, same result, no more glow.
That's the triad, and the practical lifespan numbers bear this out. High-quality strontium aluminate pigments from manufacturers like Nemoto or Luminova retain about 80% of their initial brightness after 10 years of normal indoor use, normal meaning away from direct sunlight in a climate-controlled environment. Outdoors, with direct sun, rain, temperature swings, you're looking at 2 to 5 years before the glow is noticeably diminished. Cheap zinc sulfide pigments, the old technology, degrade in 6 to 12 months even indoors. They're just not stable materials.
There's a specific standard for this, right? For safety signage?
ASTM E2072. It specifies the minimum luminance for photoluminescent safety signage, 20 millicandela per square meter after 60 minutes in darkness. That's the benchmark for an emergency exit sign to be compliant. And those signs achieve their 25-plus year lifespan because the phosphor is encapsulated in a sealed acrylic housing. The phosphor never touches moisture, the UV exposure is filtered by the acrylic, and the whole assembly is protected from abrasion.
The lesson is, the glow material itself can last decades if you protect it from the three killers. Expose it to the elements, and you get a few years at best. The phosphor isn't failing, the packaging is.
That's the practical takeaway. If you need a glow marking that lasts, you need a protective top coat, clear epoxy or polyurethane, to shield the phosphor from UV and moisture. That's exactly what emergency exit sign manufacturers do, and it's why those signs outlast the buildings they're installed in. You walk into a 30-year-old building, the exit sign still glows perfectly during a power outage. That's not because the phosphor is magic, it's because it was never allowed to get wet or sun damaged.
For someone who wants to mark tools or equipment that glow in the dark, which is probably the use case behind the prompt, what's the actual best solution?
Glow-in-the-dark tape. Photoluminescent vinyl tape that's ASTM E2072 compliant. It comes in rolls, you cut it to size, you stick it on. It's the most practical solution by far because the phosphor is already encapsulated in the vinyl and protected by a clear top layer. The manufacturing process handles all the protection for you. You just peel and stick.
That tape is surprisingly durable, right? I've seen it used on emergency equipment in industrial settings.
The good stuff has a pressure-sensitive adhesive rated for years of service, and the vinyl substrate is chemically resistant enough for most environments. It's not 400 degrees and acetone resistant, but for marking a toolbox, a flashlight, a circuit breaker panel, emergency shutoffs, it's perfect.
If you really need a precise marking, like a label or a specific shape.
Then you use a glow-in-the-dark paint applied with a stencil, and you seal it with a clear top coat. Two-part epoxy mixed with strontium aluminate powder is actually a fantastic DIY solution. The epoxy is thick enough to hold the particles in suspension, it cures to a durable finish, and it provides some inherent protection against moisture and UV. It's not adding 780 level permanent, but for toolboxes, equipment cases, workshop organization, it works beautifully.
I've seen people do this for custom guitar pedal boards, actually. Mixing glow powder into epoxy to mark signal paths and knob positions for dart stages.
That's a perfect application. Indoors, climate-controlled, no direct sunlight, that epoxy-glowed marking will last essentially forever.
If you need both the permanent marking and the glow function,
then you use two separate things. Standard industrial permanent marker for the labeling. You're adding 780 or Marcal and a strip of glow tape right next to it. You get the chemical and thermal resistance where you need it, and the photoluminescence where you need it. They don't have to be the same product.
There is something almost philosophical about that. The best solution is two separate tools, not one mythical product that does everything.
That's often the case in materials science. The absence of a product isn't a market failure, it's the laws of physics drawing a line. The same reason we don't have transparent aluminum for starship viewports, although in this case the constraints are pretty fundamental. Particle size versus brightness, solvent suspension versus pigment density, thermal stability versus trap integrity. These are intrinsic trade-offs, not engineering problems waiting for a clever solution.
Although you mentioned quantum dots in the research, is there anything on the horizon that might change this?
Quantum dot phosphors and perovskite nanocrystals are being researched as alternatives to bulk strontium aluminate. Quantum dots can be engineered to have very specific emission wavelengths and potentially long afterglow. And they're tiny, we're talking 2 to 10 nanometers, which is 1,000 times smaller than the strontium aluminate particles we've been discussing.
They'd stay suspended in solvent inks, no problem. At that size, you're dealing with colloidal suspensions, not settling slurries.
But right now, quantum dot phosphors have their own problems. They're often based on cadmium or lead, which are toxic, or indium, which is expensive. The afterglow durations aren't anywhere near strontium aluminate yet. We're talking seconds to minutes, not hours. And they're sensitive to oxygen and moisture in ways that make strontium aluminate look robust. A quantum dot that hits air without encapsulation is dead in seconds.
5 to 10 years out, maybe?
Perovskite phosphors are another candidate. They're cheap. They can be tuned across the visible spectrum, and some formulations show persistent luminescence. But they degrade rapidly in air and are even more moisture-sensitive than strontium aluminate. The encapsulation requirements would be extreme. You'd essentially need to hermetically seal every particle.
For now, strontium aluminate is still the king. And it's worth pausing on that. The fact that a material discovered in 1993 is still the best we have for this application, despite 3 decades of materials science research.
It's been the king since 1993, and nothing has knocked it off the throne. The Nemota discovery was transformative. They took glow-in-the-dark from a novelty to a functional material. The fact that we're still using essentially the same chemistry 3 decades later tells you how good it is. It's one of those rare discoveries where the first thing they found turned out to be almost optimal.
The radium era before that. That's worth mentioning just to appreciate how far we've come.
Radium-based glow paint was used from the early 1900s through the 1960s. It didn't need to be charged. The radium was radioactive and continuously excited, a zinc sulfide phosphor. So it glowed constantly, 24 hours a day, for years. But it was, you know, radioactive. The Radium Girls case, factory workers who painted watch dials and ingested radium from licking their brushes to get a fine point, is one of the most tragic chapters in industrial history. They developed horrific radiation-induced cancers, and their legal battle essentially created workplace safety standards in the United States.
Now we have a material that's non-toxic, non-radioactive, 10 times brighter, and lasts 10 times longer. That's genuine progress. From glows forever but kills you, to glows for hours, and you can eat off it.
Don't eat it. And it's worth noting, strontium aluminate is safe. You can handle it, you can mix it into epoxy in your garage, you can put it on your kids' ceiling stars. The europium and dysprosium are present in tiny quantities, fractions of a percent, and they're bound in the crystal lattice. They're not leaching out. The safety data sheets classify it as non-hazardous.
To pull together the 3 answers, how does it work? Strontium aluminate crystals, doped with europium and dysprosium, create electron traps that slowly release, absorb light energy over hours. Do oil-based industrial permanent glow markers exist? No. The phosphor particles are too large, too dense, too heat-sensitive, and too moisture-sensitive to work in solvent-based industrial marker formulations. Does glow-in-the-dark stop working? Yes, but not because it runs out. It degrades from UV damage to the binder, moisture damage to the crystal, and thermal damage to the lattice.
The practical recommendation, if you need glow markings that last, use ASTM E2072 compliant photoluminescent tape or mix strontium aluminate powder into 2-part epoxy and seal it with a clear top coat. If you need industrial permanence, use a standard industrial marker and add glow tape nearby.
The absence of a product is often more interesting than its existence. It reveals the hard constraints of materials science.
Those constraints are fascinating. The same strontium aluminate chemistry is being researched for light-storing concrete and glow-in-the-dark road markings. In those applications, the 10-year degradation cycle is actually a feature, planned obsolescence for safety markings that need to be refreshed on a predictable schedule anyway. If road markings lasted 50 years, you'd never repaint them, and the lines would wear away from tire abrasion long before the glow faded.
Imagine highways where the lane markings glow all night without electricity.
It's already being tested. The Netherlands has a pilot stretch of highway with photoluminescent road markings. The challenge is exactly what we've been discussing, keeping the phosphor protected from moisture and abrasion from car tires. But it's an engineering problem, not a physics problem. The underlying material works. You just need to figure out how to embed it in a road surface that gets beaten by 18-wheelers in the rain for a decade.
That's the through line of this whole topic. The physics is solid. The engineering is where it gets hard.
Which is true of so many technologies. The lab proves it works. The factory proves it's hard.
Now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
In the early 1500s, Dutch colonists in Suriname recorded that indigenous Carib people consumed a daily broth made from boiled cassava leaves, maniac root scrapings, and smoked peccary fat, a single bowl of which provided roughly 14,000 micrograms of vitamin A, equivalent to eating 47 modern supermarket carrots in one sitting.
47 carrots? I can't decide if that's a superfood or a biological weapon.
That's both impressive and deeply unsettling. The peccary fat is the part that gets me. Smoked peccary fat as a daily staple. So to wrap this up, the open question is whether quantum dot or perovskite phosphors will eventually crack the particle size problem and give us a true glow-in-the-dark marker. Probably not in the next 5 years, but the incentives are there. Emergency signage, industrial safety, consumer products, there's a market waiting for whoever solves it.
Until then, we work with what the physics allows, which is still pretty remarkable. A material you charge with a flashlight, and it glows all night. That's not nothing.
Not nothing at all. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com.
If you enjoyed this, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. in your head. Send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird props, that's the close from sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird props, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.